This is Tom Heck with the Manager as Coach Boot Camp. Today is August 27th, 2008. It is 1:04 p.m. Eastern. And today we have a special guest. This is a special bonus session of the Manager as Coach Boot Camp. And our guest speaker today is Dave Buck, who is a master certified coach and the CEO of Coachville, Coachville.com, the largest social network for business and life coaches in the world, with the purpose to create a win-win world through coaching by guiding individuals and teams to win the games of their lives on their own terms. Today we're going to be talking with Dave about structuring your team or even your success in terms of a game. So let me say a few other things about Dave. He connects the worlds of life coaching, personal development, business, and athletics. And I'll mention athletics here in just a moment. As a life coach, he has coached over 1,000 individuals one-on-one, and I'm one of them, and in small groups, and I'm also one of those that participate in a small group. He has also trained several thousand coaches as the lead trainer for Coachville's Graduate School of Coaching. He is the leader in the coaching industry. He was selected by the International Coach Federation to participate in the first ever Global Coaching Leader Summit with 30 colleagues. Dave has worked side by side with Thomas Leonard, one of my coaching heroes, and Thomas Leonard is the founder of the life coaching movement. And Thomas Leonard created Coachville in 2000. And Dave worked with him closely on that. And then Dave became the CEO of Coachville shortly after Thomas passed away in February 2003. Dave is a founding member of the Transformational Leadership Council, a group founded by Jack Canfield, who is the author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And this council includes several other leaders of the personal development movement, including Wayne Dyer, John Gray, Rhonda Byrne, and many members of this council are, by the way, part of the hit movie The Secret that many of you are familiar with. Dave has taught an MBA program for the Seton Hall Stillman School of Business called The Joy of Business. And finally, Dave is very busy lately because in addition to all of his other activities, he is also an athletic coach. And for many years and currently serves as the assistant men's soccer coach at Seton Hall University, a position he's held for 11 years. So, Dave, welcome to the call.
Hey, Tom, it is a great pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's I don't want to get into how difficult it was to coach me early on when you and I first but we are it's such a pleasure to have you on this call. And by the way, we're going to be broadcasting this recording to the entire TeachMeTeamwork.com community of 37,000 subscribers. So normally these calls are for the benefit of the manager, our people enrolled in the Manager as Coach Boot Camp. However, knowing that this is a big, an important topic and being able to get you on the call, I wanted to be able to share this with everyone.
Well, I really appreciate that, and it's really fun to have an opportunity to be on your show, and I've had you speak at our conferences a couple of times, and you're definitely a leader in the world of play and teamwork, and one of my favorite client success stories. So it's great to be here.
Oh well, so today we've got a group of managers on the call, and we've been talking for 10 weeks. This is our 10th week of a 10-week program. These people have endurance. The people who showed up today, especially, we've had a busy week with lots of extra calls, and so the people who are here today are really, they're over the top dedicated, and I think also that they're interested in what you have to say because of your experience with coaching and specifically the topic of, we had talked about these 15 proficiencies of play.
Yes.
And how this will impact your career path. So, and I think that as I introduced you to the call, what is unique about you is your understanding of athletics coaching and business coaching and personal development coaching and life coaching. Maybe can you give us our listeners an understanding of how your perspective might be different on coaching than other folks?
Well, that, yes, I can for sure. You know, coaching is such an amazing thing to be a part of. Being a coach is such a privilege, and it's always fun to be a coach around the time of Olympics because, you know, when you see the Olympians and you see people doing things, you know, just amazing things and the dedication they have to get there, and you always know behind every performer there's a coach. And there's someone who is there at their side the whole way, getting them prepared and having them able to get there. And my sense is that life is just basically the Olympics all the time. I mean, we are in the games of our lives every day. And the question is, are we playing? And are we playing well? Are we playing the best that we can possibly play and having the best possible performance? And I think that my perspective on coaching, having been a soccer coach for so long and, you know, a soccer coach even before I was a life coach and then a business coach, you know, I have a unique perspective on coaching. And maybe it's not unique. To me, it's so obvious. But, you know, because there's so many other ideas and notions about what coaching is, and in particular life coaching, and you hear lots of different ideas and things that people say. But I think of coaching in very simple, very basic terms. It is not complicated. And I always tell people I can explain coaching in two words. You know, remember the old, can you name that tune in three notes or whatever? You know, I can describe coaching in two words.
You got to tell them now.
The two words are play better.
Play better.
Play better. That is all you need to know about coaching. The one job of a coach is to help guide an individual to play better. Whatever the game is, the game might be business, the game might be your career, the game might be your family, the game might be soccer, it might be violin, it could any game you want to play. And my theory is that any endeavor in life can be designed as a game worth playing. And if you look at anything in life as a game worth playing, then the purpose of your coach is only one thing, and that's to help you play better.
Mm. So let's go to that place where you're talking about. Let's go to the athletic field. You can't go up to go up to a player in soccer, let's say, and just say, "I want you to play better."
That's a really good point. Well, you can, and then you have to say, "All right, now let's figure out how we're going to do that." It's interesting because you actually can. You can say, look, you need to play better. You know, we have young guys trying out for our team every year, and guys that are on the team that are, you know, a year older, it's like, look, you need to play better. Okay, so the question is, do you want to play better? Do you have that desire? And all coaching begins with desire, and this is really important for everyone here. You know, you often hear this thing as manager and managers having a coach-like perspective, and your whole program, manager as coach, is fascinating in the idea behind it. And it's a big idea, being a manager and being a coach at the same time. But I can put this in very simple terms. If you have a person who's on your team and they have a desire to play better, you can coach them. If they do not have a desire to play better, then you manage them.
Hmm.
You manage workers. You coach players.
Hmm.
It's a very powerful distinction. I've worked with this distinction in many organizations with lots of managers, and it when you just look at it that plainly, it's very eye-opening. And you all know, you have people who report to you, people that you're responsible for, and that, you know, that are part of your team, and you can look at each one, and you can really pretty much clearly delineate the people who you have with you who have the desire. They want to play better. They want to contribute more. They're up to something in their lives, in their careers. Those people, you coach. the people who are just showing up, they just want to get it done. They want to get it over with, get it done by Friday, have a weekend, have a vacation. Those are workers. And workers, you cannot coach. You cannot coach a worker. You manage a worker. You coach a player.
But what happens, Dave, in the situation where you're a manager, you come into a team and they say, okay, here's your team that you're going to be managing in this job.
Yes.
And you look around and you say, okay, out of the 15 people that I have that I'm in charge of that answer to me, three of them are players.
Yep.
Or it could be the opposite of
or six or ten or whatever it is.
So how it seems like what you would want to do ideally from a manager's coach standpoint is convert the non-players into players. Is that possible?
It is possible. It is always possible. I have the ultimate faith in the human will and the human desire to play, the human desire to contribute, to do something meaningful in life. I have the ultimate faith in that. Yet, not every person on a team is ready to make that leap.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not. Not every person is ready to play, ready to put their heart and soul into something and contribute. Some people are there for reasons other than that.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to coach someone who does not want to play is an unwinnable game for the coach.
And right? So when you, for a manager listening to this, how can you, what are some ways to determine that someone wants to play?
Well, it's a very good question. Other than you can see the spark of light in their eyes,
right,
which is always the place to start. But let's, Tom, it's a really good question, and let's talk a little bit about it because, I think it's, I presented this in a very black and white on-off sort of way, and really the truth is it's more of a spectrum, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's shades of gray in between, and there's going to be some people who are players, and some days they're in work mode, and you're going to have some people who are workers, and every once in a while they come to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that is true also. But let's look at what it takes to play and play better, and some ways you can distinguish when you're in play mode and when you're in work mode.
Now, are these are we leading into the 15 proficiencies of play?
Yes.
Okay. And by the way, what I'd like to do for our listeners is if you hit your star 6 key to unmute, I can see it on this end, and I can tell that you're in the queue with a question for Dave. So Dave, hit us with some of the – we won't be able to necessarily cover all 15.
No, not all 15, but we can cover a few key ones.
Okay.
All right, a few key ones. And that can spark some conversation because I would love to hear the thoughts of the folks here on the call because I know the dialogue is really the key. So I want to spark some conversation.
Okay.
So when you look at being a player, I gave you the first core ability of players, and that is desire. If you're a player, you have to be able to tap into your passion for the game. You have to have this desire to play better, to contribute more, and to win on your own terms. And this is an important thing for managers as coach, is that, every person on your team has to have a winnable game for them personally. Not everyone contributes in the same way. Not everyone contributes the same amount. So you have to be able to distinguish for each person on your team how to create a winnable game for them. What is their next step for playing better? So the first two ideas in being a player, the first is desire, and the second is what we call winnability. It's your ability to understand your current reality and to create a game for yourself or as with your coach that you can play. What is the next level? What's the next step up in your contribution?
Can you give us an example of that?
Well, I'll give a soccer example because it's the one that just immediately comes to mind. We have some guys on our team that are potentially All-Americans, right? They're really fantastic players. And for them, winnable for them is maybe they scored 5 goals last year, and this year they want to get 8 or 10 and really contribute more to the team winning. But then we have other guys who they may only get into 2 or 3 games the whole season. Right, so for them, their winnable game is not to go out and score 10 goals this year. Their winnable game is to get better every day in practice, to be a real contributor when we have scrimmages among ourselves and to score goals in practice and to be a real contributor in practice. And then to make it so that we feel comfortable, we can get you into the game for 15 or 20 minutes and you will fit into the game and you'll feel like you're a contributor. So for some people, a winnable game is they want to score 10 goals this year. For some people, their winnable game is just to make it so that we know we can put them on the field in 3 or 4 games and they'll contribute. So different people are at different levels of the game and they contribute in different ways.
So is the coach's responsibility in that situation, let's say you have a potential All-American, and you're All-American, you know, this really good player scores 5 last year, and they say, well, I'd like to go for 6. And you're sitting there thinking, God, this guy has got so much more capacity than 6.
Yes.
You know, why isn't he reaching higher, bigger?
Yes.
And so is that where you start to have that conversation about desire?
Absolutely.
You know,
okay. Well, there's a couple other conversations that come after the winnability, right? So, but you make a really good point. The winnable game is in the sweet spot. There's a sweet spot between too easy and way too hard, right? So the sweet spot of the winnable game for each player on your team is right in that place in between where it's challenging but doable, right? It's a stretch. One of the most creative and rewarding things about coaching is finding that sweet spot, the little bit of a stretch for each player. If you try to stretch them too far, then you create an unwinnable game, and that creates frustration, overwhelm, and apathy. Mm-hmm. If you don't make it challenging enough, that also creates apathy. It's like, oh, it's too easy. This is a walk in the park. I'm not challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always the job of the coach to stretch your player just that next step, just that next step.
And this is what you're saying is completely individualized. It's not
correct.
You wouldn't say, I want everybody this year to score 10 goals.
No, that would not make sense. Coaching is a personalized relationship between coach and player, and the coach and player have to talk together and understand each other and come up with what is the winnable game for that player in the next season, what we call a season. And your season in your business might be a year, it might be 3 months. 3 months is, you know, kind of the universal concept of a season. And as a player and a coach, you always want to be looking at the next season. Or the current season and then the next season. So
mm-hmm.
you want to look at things in 3-month chunks. You know, and this is one of the big things about work. You know, we have the annual performance review. What a joke. I mean, you can't analyze a whole year of activity and, you know, a 1-hour session or whatever. That makes no sense. You know, evaluation has to be an ongoing process, seasonal. You know, and we'll talk, as we talk a little bit more about coaching and games, you know, you want to look at every, you know, I like to bring things down, you know, in business terms, I like to look at every week as a new game, you know, and then a 3-month period is a season, and then you have to say, okay, this season is over, now we're going to look for the next season. Now what are we going to do? What's our next step in each person becoming a better player?
Mm-hmm.
So let me talk about a few key things, because there's a few great things here that we can separate that will help you see the distinction between a worker and a player. 3 key distinctions, and these are the next 3 abilities of players. So we talked about desirability and winnability are the first 2, but let me give you the next 3, because this will really open up the conversation and you'll see something really powerful.
Okay.
The number 3 ability of a player is called master ability. It's the concept of pursuing mastery in the game, the activities and the skills of the game. Players pursue mastery. Workers are just trying to get it done. Okay, if you're a worker, you just want to get it done by the deadline. It's all about the deadline and getting it done. If you're a player, yes, you want to get the results, but you want to get the results by pursuing mastery on a day-by-day basis of being the best at doing whatever you do, being the best at it that you can possibly be, and getting better and better and better at it every day. You know, we always talk about Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods doesn't try to get it done. Oh, I just want to get the ball in the darn hole, right? That's getting it done. Tiger Woods is pursuing mastery on every shot, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, put it in business terms. Let's say you're in business, and one of the things you have to do is talk to customers. You have to talk to customers, and you have to get them excited about what you do and what your customer what your company offers. Well, one thing is to say, oh, I just got to get 10 calls done. I just got to get this done and talk to these 10 people. Or you can pursue mastery in that conversation and say, all right, I'm going to talk to these 10 people, and I am going to really focus on connecting with them, being the, you know, really getting my message across, really finding out what their concerns are, and pursue each conversation as something that I can become masterful at. Mm. And become great at doing this conversation, because I know I'm going to talk to 10 people every day, so I really want to get good at it. I want to make it so that when I hang up that phone, I'm thinking, wow, that was a great call. I can't wait to do the next one. I'm getting better at this. All right, so players pursue mastery. Workers just try to get it done. Tick it off the list. Oh, I just got to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, the next one is called, this is very interesting, it's called enjoyability. And this relates to or is about your ability to perceive challenges as enjoyable rather than as setbacks. And if there's one key distinction between a worker and a player that you can focus in on, and yourself, if you think to yourself, am I working right now or am I playing right now? This is the one. This is the one. It's called enjoyability, and it goes like this. If you're going into your day, and you have your plan, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this. This is what I'm going to do today. And then an unexpected challenge occurs, something you didn't think was going to happen or you didn't plan on, and this challenge happens out of nowhere. A player sees that challenge and says, all right, I love a challenge. Let's figure out how we're going to handle this. Let's get into it. A worker says, oh, crap. Now we're never going to make our deadline. Now we're screwed. Why did this have to happen? Players love challenges, and they dive into them. Why? Because every challenge, expected or unexpected, they know that every challenge you face makes you a better player. Right? Players are always in pursuit of mastery. So a challenge is like, oh, all right, once I handle this challenge, I'm going to be an even better player. But a worker faces a challenge with the, oh, crap, now we're not going to make our deadline, full of fear, this is a disaster. That's working. Okay, so if you are in your day and something unexpected happens and you say, oh, crap, you're working. If an unexpected challenge happens and you go, all right, let's face this one, you're playing. Because that's what players do. Players enjoy challenges. They step up the challenges. They seek bigger and bigger challenges. Because they enjoy it, because they know with every challenge you grow and you become a better player. So that goes back to the, you know, point number three. If you're seeking mastery, you love a challenge. If you're just trying to get it done, you don't like challenges.
And, you know, it's funny. We talked about this very thing yesterday. We were discussing Tom Peters' Brand You, and
yes,
something I know you're really familiar with. And
yes,
he and his work talks about the need nowadays that in building Brand You, the pursuit of mastery, and
yes,
that as you pursue mastery, you're going to encounter lots of challenges.
Correct.
That's part of it. If you don't want to pursue mastery, it's a great way to avoid many of life's challenges.
Yes.
And at the same time, you never build your brand. But you know, so it's funny because we were talking about these very same topics. Well, let me do this. Is there anyone with a question for Dave at this point? We've covered desire, winnability, masterability, enjoyability. Does anybody have a question about maybe application to this in the work environment with a team?
Hey, Tom, while they're thinking of their question, let me give you one more.
Fine.
Real fast.
Okay.
Okay, one more, and then that'll set the table, and we can have lots of conversations.
Okay.
The last one, this is an important one as well. It has to do with results. Players care about the results. Workers do, too. Workers are trying to get it done by the deadline. Players look at results as well. But here's the difference. Players are always seeking feedback. Why? Goes back to the original point. Players seek feedback because when you get feedback, it helps you play better. So at the end of the day, at the end of the week, players say, all right, let's look at what happened. Let's see what worked, what didn't work. Let's look at our results. Did we win? Did we lose based on our definition or what we're trying to accomplish? And if you lose, you say, all right, we lost. We didn't get it done. Let's not despair. Let's look at what we can learn and then play better next week. This game is over, can't bring it back. All we can do is figure out how to play better and look at the next week. Workers don't like feedback. They don't care about feedback. Feedback is a bother to them. It's like, oh, don't even bother telling me. I don't want to know. And at the end of a week, if you're a worker, mostly you're going to say, oh, crap, we didn't get enough done. Next week we're even going to be behind. You know, we're always behind the eight ball. You know, so workers look at their task list and they go, oh, crap, you know, we had this challenge, we didn't make the deadline, now next week we start behind. It's just this never-ending, unwinnable game, unwinnable idea that you can get your task list completed. But players, yeah, they're trying to get results, but they're looking at it as a game. It's like every week they're going to play, they're going to give their heart and soul, they're going to face challenges, and at the end of the week, they want feedback. They want to look at the results and say, all right, how can we play better? What can we learn from this? What can we use to play better the next week? How did we become better players this week? So now we know next week we're even going to do better. You know, so great players seek feedback. They want to know, how am I doing, coach? How am I doing? Workers do not come in looking for feedback.
So it looks like we do have someone with a question.
Let's do it. Say
this is that I can see where using some of this language you can begin to say, okay, how am I going to define the culture of my team? What am I looking for?
Yes.
You know, if you say, if someone comes to you and says, hey, you know what, I'd like more responsibility, I too want to become a leader, then you can say to them, okay, here are the criteria that I look for in a leader in our organization.
Yes.
And it gives them, it helps them say, wow, okay, well this kind of puts it on me to, you know, that to go to the manager and say, okay, I need feedback. I want coaching. Give it to me. And that tells, you know, the supervisor that, wow, this person is hungry. They want to play. They want to be a player.
Yes. And that's what, you know, great players, you can pick them out, as we said, but you can inspire people too. Because as I said, it is a continuum, it's a spectrum, and I believe in my heart that every person in this world has a desire to contribute and has a desire to play, to see life as a game, to see their career as a game, to put their heart and soul into it. I believe that is inside every single person. Whether you can draw it out of them, whether you can spark it, it depends on their situation. Some people are just in the wrong job, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the organizations that we've brought this to, and I'll just share this one little anecdote. We brought this concept to an organization in Florida, a juvenile justice company. And when we first went in there, they had a turnover ratio of 300%. 300%, which means every 4 months they had a new workforce.
Wow.
It was a tough environment. They were working with kids in juvenile justice homes. It was not easy. and they were all working, and they would be, go in there, they would get, you know, discouraged, and then they would quit. 300% turnover. We went in there and said, okay, we're going to turn this into a game. We're going to get every person on this staff, it was like 400 or 500 people, playing a game. We taught every manager how to coach their team as if it was a game, how to get everyone playing. At the end of 1 year, their turnover was 60%.
Wow. Think about the money saved and just that and the skill level that's retained.
It was miraculous. It was miraculous, and we're writing up a case study about the whole thing. A couple little side notes. Number one, their accidents, their, you know, work-related accidents reduced so dramatically that they're able to reduce their insurance premium by $1 million.
Wow. And they attribute that to the system of coaching.
Correct.
Well, we've got a very patient person here.
Let's have the question. Let's do it.
Who's got a question? Oh, it looked like someone was unmuted there.
This is Tammy.
Yes, Tammy, go ahead.
My question would be, how do you start a conversation, or do you, with somebody who is not a player and just a worker?
How do you start the conversation? Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I might approach it in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you have a group of folks that are with you, mm-hmm. that are on your team, and you can kind of pick out who the people that you think are the players, and you start coaching them, inspiring them, encouraging them, I would rather work with the people who are players mm-hmm. and pull them up and create that culture of inspiration with the people who do want to play.
I agree.
And then what happened at Sunshine, where the company that I'm talking about, was as we brought in this coaching culture and this idea of making it into a game and playing, and focusing on the people who really did want to play, as they did that, some of the folks who were more in worker mode, the ones who caught the inspiration, they came on board.
Okay.
And the ones who, and they, like, I want to play too. And, like, this looks like fun. I want to get into this. And the ones who didn't, well, they left. Right?
Okay.
So it was like a natural selection process where the players just naturally got into the game and got into the heart of it and stayed and made it work, you know, made it possible. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, you know, if your environment doesn't have that kind of turnover, right, so you don't have people coming and going so quickly, that maybe is a little more challenging. You know, I think a heart-to-heart conversation is where you have to start. You would say, look, you know, here you are, you work for me, you're in this company. You know, what would you like to do? What would be inspiring for you? What would spark your desire? What aspect of your job would you like to try and get better at and okay. become a better contributor, you know, that will help you here, and it might help you, you know, in your future, whatever you might go and do after you leave here. So I think the point about talking to people about play is it really has to come from the heart.
Okay.
That's really the bottom line. It has to come from the heart. And you, as the manager, you have to have a belief that every person who is with you is a player. Inside of them, they have the desire. And you have to see yourself as, it's my purpose to find the player inside of them.
And what if they say, I'm giving 110%, mm-hmm. but I see them failing time and time again, not meeting deadlines, not basically a match for the job, or doesn't have the skill set?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So if you see someone giving all they've got and they're not able to keep up with, you know, what we would say keep up with the game, right? They're not good enough for that position, then you have four, and this brings us into the next step of coaching, to understand coaching, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's four ways, four things that you as a coach have at your in your toolkit to help someone play better. It's four things. There's only four things, and you can look at each of these four and see what makes sense. I'll give you the four things very quickly. The first thing is the skills. do they have the skills, the fundamental skills, to do the job or to play the game? So if they are in a job where they're talking to people, do they have the right conversational skills? If they're in a job where they have to do certain tasks or complete certain things, do they have the skills to do it? You'll be amazed at how many people don't have the skills to do what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many people don't have the skills. So your first job as a coach is you have to know the skills of the game of every player on your team. You have to know the fundamental skills and help them learn those skills through practice. Mm-hmm. So that's step one. The next thing you have is game plan. Game planning is you create a short-term objective. You can call it a deadline if you really have to, but I prefer not to use that language pattern because it's so discouraging. Mm-hmm. You could say, here's a short-term objective, okay? First, we know you have the skills. We know you can do this. Now, let's make a plan where you can utilize your strengths, your assets, your resources, and get this accomplished, create this result in this time frame. Okay, so you want to work with them personally to say, all right, for you, these are your strengths, these are your weaknesses. Let's make a plan for you. And it takes a little more time for you as the manager. Instead of just assigning it, you have to work with them a little bit and coach them a little bit. But you want to make a plan that you think is reasonable, that if they really go for it, if they play well, they can accomplish this. So that's number two, game plan. Number three is the inner game. Thoughts, feelings, and actions. Okay? Most people, when they step into a bigger game, they will not have alignment in their thoughts, feelings, and actions. They may have beliefs that say that they can't do it. They may not feel like they may have self-worth issues, or they may have emotions that come up that get in the way, that get in the way of them making the right choices at the right times, that lose their focus. So this happens all the time. This is not a bad thing. This is a natural part of playing a big game. You're going to have inner conflict. You're going to have limiting beliefs. And as a coach, you have to be willing to go there. You got to be willing to find out what emotions are happening here. What are your feelings? What are your thoughts? Why did you make that decision? What happened when you made that choice to do this instead of this? What was going on in your mind? Maybe you were reacting to something. Maybe your thoughts were in a limited fashion rather than thinking big. You know, these types of things, being willing to really go and talk to people to find out what's on their mind, what's in their heart, what's going on with them. This is the inner game. And this comes up all the time. You know, it's as a coach, you have to be willing to get into the inner game with the people that you care about, with the people on your team. So that's number three. And then the fourth thing that every coach has to know about is you have to know about designing a winning environment. Does your player have all the resources they need, the connections? Do they have all the tools they need? Are there obstacles? You know, if someone is coming in late to work every day, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, you're coming in late, you don't have the right motivation. Well, you don't know. Maybe they have major family issues. Maybe they have a parent that's with them that they have to take care of first. Maybe they have a spouse that has a problem. Maybe they had to take the kids somewhere. You know, there's people have environmental issues, and just being willing to find out what's in people's environments to see if they have a winning environment is a big deal, because a lot of people have more obstacles than support. And if you're playing a game and you've got more obstacles than support, you're not going to win no matter how hard you try. So it comes down to, as a coach, knowing you have to teach the skills, you have to help people craft a game plan based on their strengths, you have to be willing to look at people and talk about the inner game of thoughts and feelings and how does that create their actions, and then fourth, and maybe most importantly, is you have to do everything possible to create a winning environment in your office, but also be aware of what people's the rest of their environment is like. What is their family environment like? What is their situation? What obstacles are they facing? And then, based on understanding their environment, you can begin to help them craft a more winning environment or design a game that's winnable for them based on their current situation, their current inner game, their current environment, their current skills, etc. So it really, bottom line is, you know, I really have a great admiration for all of you here, because when you talk about coaching and managing, for sure, coaching takes a lot more intimacy. It takes a lot more energy in terms of your emotional capacity, you know, your willingness to be in there with people, supporting them. It takes a lot more, I think, to coach than it does to manage, but the rewards are also dramatically greater if you're willing to put the energy into it and the care.
That's great. Well, looking at the time, I want to make sure we, if you have a question, just hit your *6 key and unmute. I should, if there's anybody right now that has a question, go ahead and hit your *6 key for Dave about applying this material or...
Yeah, any questions at all, I'd love to hear them, or, you know, thoughts or challenges, whatever.
Okay, well, I have one of them, Dave, and that is, how do people respond? Oh, well, I'm going to ask this question. Looks like someone has got a question for you. Go ahead.
This is Harley.
Yes, Harley.
And I like the word winning environment. How do you tell whether you have a winning environment or what the obstacles are that are insurmountable? Are they in your own thoughts, or are there really some insurmountable obstacles that you cannot hurdle?
Well, that's actually a very big question. That takes a big conversation to sort through. But let me say this, because you said some things that are very good in terms of your intuition on this was right on target, which is this. The exploring the inner and the outer, you know, the inner world and the outer world of your environment and the world around you. These two things go hand in glove, okay? Your outer world is a reflection of what's happening on the inside. And at the same time, you become on the inside, you evolve by adapting to the world around you. So every one of us has a bi-directional relationship with our world. So that means that if you're doing work on the inside, you're trying to have better thoughts, you're working through emotions, you're taking actions, so you're working on the inner stuff, then gradually over time your environment will begin to change. So the outer world becomes a reflection of who you are, but that's very slow, very gradual. At the same time, we all know that we quickly adapt to new situations. So as a manager, this is good news. If you can create an environment where there's relationships, where the physical space has a feeling of life to it, you know, is this alive? Is there something happening here that's worth being a part of? Then people will adapt to that. Humans naturally adapt to their environment. And you all know this. You've been in this situation. I'm sure that every one of you has been to a seminar or a weekend workshop or something, and you go there and you think, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. I'm transformed. I can't wait to go home because I'm a whole new person. Then you go home, you go back to the office, and within 3 days, what happens?
Business as usual.
It's business as usual. It's all back to the same thing. Because what happened was, when you were at the workshop, you did not transform. All you did was adapt to that environment. And that environment was transformational and exciting and alive, and you adapted to that environment. But then when you go home, you're in the environment that is a reflection of who you were before you went to the seminar. So you come back and you naturally adapt to the environment that's already in place, which is the old you. So, in order to create sustainable change, you have to work on both the inside and the outside. You have to work on your thoughts and feelings, and I believe, you know, you brought up the word insurmountable. I do not believe in insurmountable. I believe that when human beings come to life, anything is possible. Anything is possible, and amazing things have happened in this world. And yes, some problems in this world seem insurmountable, and you know, but in your office, in your business, you do not have to solve world peace there. Right?
You know, sorry, but that's funny.
No, that is, it's true though, right? You do not have to solve world peace in your office. You just have to be very clear about the objectives that this group of people is going to create and focus on that. And within that world, there is nothing insurmountable if the human beings on that team are alive. If, and by alive, I mean in spirit. If they come to life, if they say, yes, we are going to do this. We're going to look at ourselves deeply. We're going to clean this place up. We're going to make sure when we look around in this office, we see life happening. You know, we feel like when we come in here, this place is alive. And you can make any place come alive if you choose to, if you get people on board. And it's important. It's important that, you know, that your office has a feeling of life to it. You know, whatever that may be, it's different for everyone. There's no prescription. It's not like, oh, put in a ping pong table and it'll come to life. That's nonsense. It's, but it's like, what can you put in the space? How can you, you know, clean it up or, I don't know, put in a plant or whatever you want to do. But it's something that the group says, yeah, let's clean this place up. Let's make it come alive a little bit. And then if the people are coming to life, and the environment is coming alive, then you create the possibility for sustainable results.
Dave, I got to jump in and give you a quick observation. This,
yes.
As you know, I've enjoyed playing lacrosse, and now I'm learning to officiate. And there's some teams that I'm as an official, you kind of have a different perspective. You know, you walk out on the field, you see how people carry themselves.
Yes.
And, you know, I was thinking, okay, in an office space, you can create an environment a little easier. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder how Dave creates an environment on a soccer field. Well, and then I answered my own question. You can see how coaches create an environment by how they talk to their players, how
yes.
they organize them, how they show up, and they are organized. They have their papers with them. Some of the teams that I at game time are so organized. The coaches told them, okay, when you go to put your gear on the sidelines, you will put it just so, and it's all lined up. And then you see the other side, and gear is spread all over the place,
that's
and the guy's wondering where their gloves are. Where is my helmet? I'm missing my chin strap. And you
yes.
look over at this other team, it's just like robots put everything down. It gives a different feeling of success.
Yes.
You go, that, you know, as an official, I say to myself, wow, that team's got it together. They may even lose, but wow, they're going places.
Yes, they have a feeling of aliveness.
Yeah.
Tom and Julius.
Yes, Julius.
You brought up a soccer example. Two of our kids played for a team last year where the head coach took just ragtag kids, and they wound up winning 4 games in 2 days to be champions. And he was so good at talking to them and getting them to play along. And then we heard he took an all-star team, which a lot of times are ragtag, and yeah, they're good players, but they don't play together.
Yes.
And within a half hour, they knew each other's names, and they learned each other's games, and they played really well. And you can't put your finger on what exactly he did.
Yes.
But he got them to connect. He had the tools.
Yes.
And it was incredible to watch.
And that's the winning environment that you're talking about, Dave.
Right, and the other thing was, unlike any other team our kids have played on, the parents came together, and it's the best group of parents we've ever had on a soccer team. It was infectious.
Very nice, yeah. And that is the power of the environment. You know, and it can start with one person having an idea, really and truly. If one person says, we can make this better, we can bring this to life. You know, we can bring a certain kind of organization. We can bring an awareness about people and what their desires are, a communication, you know, all, you know, a certain kind of caring. And it contains all these things, and it's hard to put your finger on any one thing. I think you said that very well, but it is, you know, it's where the only way I can describe it is the game comes to life. Right, whatever the game is, whether it's that your game is in the business of bringing or serving certain kinds of customers, providing certain kinds of service or products, there's a game happening there. And if you can bring that game to life and bring it to life within each person through caring for them, through supporting them by helping them play better, helping them see that they can contribute to the game, that they can connect with others in a meaningful way, all of this is possible. Human beings love this, and when it's happening, they'll get right into it. But if it's not happening, they will, you know, it can fall apart very quickly. So it really takes energy to create this kind of environment. But like you said, it's infectious.
Well,
and I would say the one thing, and there's not one thing. There's got to be a couple of things, but let me just put a couple of things on the table quickly, right? So the first thing is the coach has to know the game. They have to love the game and know the game, right? Because the only way this happens is through respect. You know, respectability is one of the core abilities of players, but you're not going to respect the coach if you don't feel that this coach knows the game, number one, and number two, has your interests at heart, wants you to have a great experience. Right, and when you feel the coach knows the game and cares about you as a person and has a vision for where this team can go, those are those three things. Knows the game, cares about you, has a vision of where this team can go and communicates that vision, gets everyone being a meaningful contributor to that vision. When you've got those three things, that's the makings of the environment that you're talking about.
Well, Dave, we're almost at the top of the hour, and I don't want to. I want to make sure that you share with everybody what the next step. I'm hoping through this conversation that we've sparked some interest in where we can go with coaching and maybe the next step. And so I know that you offer coach training at Coachville,
yes,
and you share this philosophy in depth about. I've seen you on stage at a conference, and you're very effective at it. So what is the next step for folks?
Well, if you've been in this conversation here and you're listening, you think, wow, I have the desire, right? If you feel like, you know, I have the desire, I want to learn how to do this. I want to learn how to create this within myself and with my team, then what that means is you have the desire to become a masterful coach. You have that desire. It's like, okay, I really want to do this. If you visit us at coachville.com, you can learn there about our Center for Coaching Mastery. And we have a variety of programs there. You can do our full-blown coach training program, which is a one-year, very rigorous program to study and become a masterful coach if you want to pursue certification, that sort of thing. Or you can just dip your toe in the water. You can come and just do the Coach to Win course, which is based on this content that we talked about today, which is called our Play Better Coaching Method. And you can just do the Coach to Win course. You can do it live. We have one starting next week. On Wednesdays, 2 p.m. or 7 p.m., or you can even do it as an electronic course. You can do it as a home study course, which is, you know, if you don't have the right timing or the class times don't work for you, you can do it as a home study. But we would just love to have you. You know, you can come and join Coachville. You can start with a free membership, and that'll get you on board with learning about what we're doing. And then, you know, jump into some of our classes if you like. And if you have any questions about this, if you think, wow, I'd like to learn more, I'm not quite really sure where to begin, just give us a call in the office. You can call the office. It's 973-601-9444. And that's our office in New Jersey. You'll get a call back either from someone here in New Jersey or someone on my team in California. But, you know, call, leave us a message. And we can have one of our new student advisors give you a call back and, you know, see if, you know, what you'd like to do. We can help you put together a plan, either going for the full-blown thing or just starting with a home study course. Whatever is right for you, we can help you figure that out. But if you want to jump into some live classes, you know, our fall semester does begin next week. And so the timing could be perfect if you want to jump right in, and we can help you figure out how to do that. You just give us a call.
Awesome. Yes, there's lots of resources. And so, Dave, maybe wrapping up here, why is coaching, in your estimation, now more than ever the skill set to have as a leader, as a manager?
Well, you know, how much time have we got? Do you want me to give you the one-minute version?
The one-minute version.
All right, here we go. In 1 minute, this is the way I see the world today. I see the world, I look at the world, I'm a capitalist, and I look at the world in terms of economics. And in the world of economics, we've had several different phases of the world and human beings in terms of economics. We've had the agrarian age and the industrial age, and then we had the service age and the information age. And I believe that there's a new age dawning in the world where our economic survival is based on inspiration. Hmm. The world of information is coming to a close because we've all got as much information as we need. And so when one economic time comes to a close, a new one is always born. And the new age coming is the inspiration age, which means people want to engage in activities that are economically viable but also meaningful. And I'm sure that applies to all of you. If you are looking for meaning in your life, one of the greatest possible things you can do to create meaning is to learn how to be of service to others by sharing what you have learned, what's worked for you, in the most positive and efficient way, and that's by coaching. So the best way you can give back everything you've learned to help other people evolve and grow is to learn how to coach, and I believe that that is going to be the fundamental skill of the inspiration age is coaching.
In the literature that I'm reading, I'm seeing the same thing, is that this the ability to coach and lead by inspiring, not motivating, but inspiring people and touching their heart is going to be the key skill.
Yes.
So, Dave, it's always a delight to talk with you. I'm so glad you're able to join us. I know you're super busy, and so thank you.
My pleasure, and thanks to all of you for being here. You know, just, you know, I'm glad for all of you to be in Tom's program. Tom is such an amazing guy. Tom, I love you, and you're an inspiration to everyone, and your ability to create play and fun in everything you do. And manager as coach was a big game for you to play, and I really have a lot of admiration for you that you jumped into it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, for those of you who are listening, we've been talking with Dave Buck, who is the CEO of CoachVille.com, C-O-A-C-H-V-I-L-L-E, CoachVille.com, and you can learn a lot more information. There's free memberships and just lots of great information there, and I absolutely encourage you to go check it out. Well, this is Tom Heck with the Manager as Coach Bootcamp. Thank you very much for listening, everybody.